Hey, soccer fans, this is Nick for Sons of a Pitch Soccer Central, and we have so much to talk about, both abroad for the World Cup and the world of international soccer, as well as things going on here at home domestically in Major League Soccer. We are through two games of the World Cup group stages, and there have been some upsets, there have been some cup sets, and there have been some smackdowns and predicted wins, and we're going to take a quick look at all of the standings of the group stages and see how each team can advance. And then in the second half of the show, after a quick sponsor break, we are going to look at the MLS roster updates, a few big moves, some in the front office as well that you need to know about, as well as talking about some of the other big messy-sized rumors, right? We're going to take a look at all of that in tonight's episode. But first, you got to get hyped. The World Cup needs their hype song. We need our hype song. So here we go. Well, soccer fans, once again, I am Nick for Sons of a Pitch Soccer Central, and we are back Monday night doing our live chat discussion covering all things Major League Soccer, CONCACAF, and just wonderfully right now, the World Cup happening over in Qatar. We do our live chats on Mondays, and I want to thank Angus McCorder for already jumping on in the chat. Angus, it's been great having you on Mondays. It's been great having you on all of our watch-alongs, live streams, listen-ins, everything we got going on for our World Cup chat. Thank you so much for joining us. And to everyone else who's jumped into our chats, for the hundreds and thousands of viewers that join us each and every live stream that we do, thank you. It really helps us out as far as the channel goes, as well as our mission of growing the sport through conversation. So I teased it before the hype music here. We're going to talk World Cup soccer for the first half of the show. And we're going to start with the group stages here in the World Cup with Group A. Let me just pull up our graphic here so you all can see it on the screen. We have Group A of the Netherlands, Ecuador, Senegal, and Qatar, the host team. And the big news out of Group A is that after two matches, Qatar is eliminated from the tournament. They cannot move on. They join South Africa of 2010 as the only host nation to not advance out of the group stage. But some people are saying they're the worst host nation because at least South Africa had a win and a draw. And the most that Qatar can get is just one win. Got to remind everybody before getting too haughty on that statistic, though, that the United States was awfully close to being that first country to not advance out of the group stage back in World Cup 94. But thanks to some good luck in that tournament and some good goal differential in the group stage, they were able to get through. So looking at this, what I predicted coming into the World Cup was that Netherlands would advance as the number one seed and Ecuador would be the number two seed. So things look pretty good as far as my predictions go in that group. Netherlands and Ecuador, unless Senegal pulls off a big upset, and we'll see if we can figure out their matches here. Let me see if I can pop it up. Senegal's next match coming up against Ecuador. So unless they can upset Ecuador, then that would assure that Senegal and Qatar do not make it out of the group stage. So taking a look at Group B, this is the big group. This is our most interesting group because it has the United States, but also no one's calling it the group of death. But if you look at this group, England, Iran, let me make sure I get that correct. Iran, right? Okay. The United States and Wales are also a part of that. Iran, the United States, and Wales were all pretty much ranked about the same. If you looked at the ELO rankings, they're like 22, 23, and 24. And if you look at the FIFA rankings, I think Iran is a little lower down just because of them coming out of the Asian Confederation and not getting, I guess you would call them, good wins throughout qualifying to boost their FIFA points up. But they're all relatively relatively close in the rankings. So for people to say this is an easy group and Iran is that one team, or maybe Wales, who had to qualify through a playoff, is that one team that's kind of the easy out, the easy result and win against, doesn't exist in this group. So that makes it extremely difficult. And that is why, though, as a USMNT fan, this is what we wanted, right? Like, beat Iran and you're in. Beat Iran and you're through. You get into the knockouts. It's been a perfect setup for the United States, the way they've handled themselves in this tournament. It would have been so much better to get that result against Wales, to get the winning result against Wales, because then you can just kind of, even with a draw against Iran, then maybe you get it on goal differential, right? But this is what we're dealt with. And I think anyone out there would have said, I will take beating Iran in the third game to advance. I think that everyone would be happy with that. And we even have all of our people checking in here in the chat, and they seem very excited and in good spirits tonight, the eve of this game. We've got Connor Knows Soccer, who's jumping in. Connor, great to see you again, my friend. Anu Wiseman, what's up, homie? Greetings to you. Hopefully you're holding it down in Atlanta. And from what I'm seeing on your timeline on Twitter, you definitely are. Dan Gehringer jumping in. Good evening to you as well, Dan. And we have Angus, who pulls up the rankings here for us. USA is at 25, Wales at 26, and Iran is in 30, according to the ELO rankings. That, of course, gets updated either daily or weekly, whereas the FIFA rankings get updated like every 2 to 3 months. So take those rankings with a grain of salt. We actually talk about those in some prior videos if you want to hear a little bit more about how those rankings are posted and calculated. And Dan says it right. Dan Gehringer says it right. I agree. It's the best situation to be in. Because right now, if Wales ends up with a victory over England and the United States has a victory over Iran, then we're through as the number one team in the group with 5 points. Now, if England wins or draws, then they're at 5 or 7 points. And the United States is sitting there, with a win, hopefully, with 5 points over Iran, over Wales, second place. And that's kind of what everyone thought about at the beginning, right? So for all the criticism that Greg Berhalter and U.S. soccer has taken during the course of this tournament, and there has been a lot, some of it justified, most of it, in my opinion, not justified, I think. The U.S., if they beat Iran, which everyone thinks they should, and no one is worried about that, though I will give you one cause to be concerned, because that's what we have to do here, right? Then they will finish second in the group behind England and probably playing the Netherlands in the first knockout round, which a lot of people think is a favorable matchup. You're catching the number one seeded team in Group A, that Pot A Group A team, the Netherlands, who aren't as good, right? We saw North Carolina fall, dropping down the standings after losing a couple games. Maybe that's the Netherlands right now. That team who was a top of the group and one of the top 10 teams in the tournament, one of the kind of dark horse favorites. That's a great matchup for the United States. So before we get ahead of ourselves, though, let me give you the cause to be concerned about this Iran game. Now, Iran is sitting at 3 points. They're 1 point ahead of the United States. If they draw the U.S., then they will stay ahead of the U.S. on points, and then will only have to worry if Wales wins and jumps them in the goal differential column, right? If Wales wins and defeats England, then they probably will jump in the goal differentials and knock Iran into the three spot, assuming Iran draws the United States. If Iran wins, then they're through. So there is much more risk for Iran to sit back and bunker and just play for a draw, unless somehow they know what the results are in the England match, but hopefully that's not what actually is going on, though crazier things have happened this World Cup, right? So that, it gives me the cause for concern. If Iran says, look, let's just try and bunker and maybe catch the U.S. on a counterattack, play a very defensive-minded game, and they're happy with a draw, that worries me a little bit, because the United States, for all their great play over their first two group games and for the emotional high of a 0-0 draw against England, has not been able to really create very, very high percentage chances on goal, right? They've scored one goal in two matches, and that was a bit of brilliance excellent counterattack, great pass by Pulisic, even better finish by Weah. And that's what it was, right? A beautiful, beautiful moment from the USMNT. But can the USA break down a team, create a few chances, score a couple three goals in this one to make Iran have to come out and chase the game, and then let the United States players control it with some of their possession and skill and speed? That worries me just a little bit. Just a little bit. I am still confident. I still believe the United States, despite what the rankings say, is a much better team than Iran, has much better players, and will win this game. That is what I believe, and I believe that we will win, as the phrase goes. Now let's take a few comments here. Dan Gehringer's got a couple of good ones. He says, FIFA rankings are updated when the bribe checks are cashed. Well said, Dan. Well said. Now, they do have a formula that awards points based on the degree of difficulty and goal differential for every game they win against an opponent. But hey, maybe they get the right opponent picked. And Dan says, let's see the U.S. win 7-1. Dan continues on, the experts, he puts in quotes, say the U.S. does not have a true striker. Yes, we've been hearing that. Let's jump into that a little bit, because who have we seen play striker for the United States? We have seen Josh Sargent start, and we have seen Haji Wright start, and neither of them scored, which is the number one job of the striker, especially in the World Cup, in the group stage, when goal differential matters, when momentum matters. They have not scored. So let me put it out here to the group chat. And Connor, I'm going to get to your comments in a second. Let me put it out here to the chat. Would you want to see one of our wingers move up top in order to allow for more talent to get on the field and allow for a different look up front? And the example here a lot of people are saying is put Reyna or put Weah as your striker and then allow the other one to play on the wing. Or do you continue to have Weah and Reyna as your right winger, one coming in for the other if needed? And then do you continue to rotate through Ferreira and Sargent and Wright? And is this Ferreira's game? We haven't seen him at all this tournament. We haven't heard much about him because of how well the U.S. has played as a team. But is Ferreira going to get the start here and or maybe come off the bench and just be those super sub legs? And as Rocky at Talking to Wood says, I'd like to see Pepe up front. Oh, wait. Yeah, absolutely, Rocky. There is definitely a lot to be said about how Pepe was left off this roster. Connor knows soccer even says Weah as a false nine Gio on the wing makes sense. That is the way to get probably your best talent. And I'm not trying to insult Haji Wright, Josh Sargent, or I almost said Ricardo Pepe or Jesus Ferreira. But the reality of it is Weah and Reyna are two of our best players. Now, in this game against Iran, if they sit back and bunker like I would anticipate they do for long stretches of this game, you're going to need guys like Weah, who run in and behind in the channels, and guys like Reyna, who can attack and are most dangerous with the ball at their feet. So maybe that is what we end up doing, or maybe that is the late game situation where you have Reyna on the wing to start, and then you bring in Weah maybe in the 50 to 60th minute if things aren't going well, or who knows? I could be completely wrong. I could be overthinking it. Maybe they put Reyna and Weah on the wings, and then you bring Pulisic in as the sub. There's a lot of different options. And Dan says he'd start with Sargent and adjust accordingly. And honestly, that's probably what they'll do. Now, let's take a look at some of Connor's comments real quick. We should beat Iran tomorrow. I think the players won't be motivated with everything that's going on. And I think you're talking about the Iranian players with all the protests and things going on back home, as well as, you know, the cheap shots that the Iranian news media is trying to take against Tyler Adams, baiting him into political statements, giving either bulletin board material or trying to get him suspended by FIFA. But God bless Tyler Adams and his maturity and his proper response. If you guys haven't seen it, go check that out. I don't want to dive into politics too much here on the podcast, but he did a really good job of answering an Iranian journalist's, or is it Iranian journalist when you add the IAN? I don't know. Maybe they'll have to pronounce that for us. Had a really good rebuttal when the journalist is trying to bait him into how can he support the United States when they're such a racist country. Now, the irony of an Iranian journalist saying that is not lost on me. But anyway, go find Tyler Adams' comments on that. Answered it, I think, perfectly, as a soccer player should. Now, Connor also jumps into a little bit more of the tactics and kind of the thoughts here on Group B. England is through. They may rest some players versus Wales. Very true, but we saw who they bring off the bench. Marcus Rashford, Jack Grealish. Who else am I forgetting? They have a stacked roster. So even their second squad, so to say, that B plus squad for England still has enough to beat Wales. And it's just to be seen if Wales wants to come out and just play balls out soccer to try and get a win and maybe sneak through on some crazy goal differential scenario with the United States and Iran's result pending, or just to come out and play for pride and try and get a win versus England or a win in the World Cup. And yes, Connor, thank you for pointing out it's not 0-0. It's 0-0. Ha ha ha. Yes, we gotta keep the definitely keep the lingo there. I love it. And Dan, I'm not knocking Pulisic. He did play excellent against England, but I think like that is something that people have thrown out there as a potential wrinkle in a lineup, maybe something to kind of throw Iran a little bit off in their game planning, where if we see Pulisic coming off the bench. Also, maybe that rests his legs a little bit, saves him from taking a beating like he usually does. And since he's not getting the foul calls, then maybe that'll help him out and stay fresh and ready, or I should say more fresh and a little more ready when it comes to the knockout stages. And Rocky says, I love Pulisic, but he's not perfect every game. His set-piece delivery has been terrible. That is the one piece of criticism I will jump on him, because I think he's in a tough spot because he gets beat up by opposing teams, doesn't get the calls that most other players would get. He's often the one that looks to drive at the defense, and a lot of people are critical of him for that, but that's what he needs to do for the United States to be successful. Drive at that defense, attack the back lines. But yes, I will criticize those set pieces. Rocky, I'm with you, man. What I really hate, and this is a general criticism, I hate near post corner kicks. Put the ball in the mixer, run a set play. Don't try to play to the near post and flick on. Like, it just doesn't work. I think that's such a low percentage play. I would rather see a short corner and maintain possession and work the ball around than I would see Pulisic whipping a low hard cross to the near post on a corner kick. Got to be better on set pieces, especially when you've got a guy like Zimmerman who can come in there and get up, especially when you've got a guy like Jedi or McKennie, if he's healthy and feeling good, who can outjump most of the people in the tournament right now, especially I would think could outmuscle and outjump some of these Iranian defenders. So I would love to see that set piece play come into play a little bit more for the United States. All right, we've prattled on for almost 20 minutes here, and we're only on Group B. Let's move it along to Group C, where Poland, surprisingly, sits atop the group right now with 4 points. Argentina and Saudi Arabia tied on 3 points. Argentina with the goal differential tiebreaker despite the loss to Saudi Arabia. And Mexico sitting in the bottom spot with 1 point. Now, Mexico's remaining match in the group is against Saudi Arabia, which most people, again, Mexico would probably say, oh, we're in that same situation as the United States. If we can play Saudi Arabia to get through, that's great. That's a situation we want to be in. But Saudi Arabia has a lot to play for, right? They can win the group depending on the other result, or they can get eliminated in a loss here. So Saudi Arabia has a lot to play for. Absolutely. Mexico, every team in this Group C is in it. And my prediction was Argentina and Poland to get out of this group. I still feel confident in that despite the final game. We'll see what happens with it. Let me ask this to the group chat. A lot of people have been down criticizing Greg Berhalter because of his inclusion of so many Major League Soccer players. But is Saudi Arabia the team that says, hey, look, you can win World Cup games with domestic league players? I think every player in Saudi Arabia, maybe with the exception of one, plays in the Saudi Arabian league. And maybe that one exception, the guy plays in Qatar. I don't know. So is Saudi Arabia the good study of its team, its chemistry, its effort? It's taking advantages of the few opportunities you get in the World Cup to score a goal. Right? Is Saudi Arabia that blueprint where you, or maybe that counter argument to say, you can't say the U.S. needs less MLS-based players, that's the problem. And honestly, I don't think it is, especially with the U.S., because we had played such excellent tactics in their first two games, and it was just a matter of the players, in my opinion, not executing and finding the back of the net. So anyway, we have Saudi Arabia and Mexico playing for potentially the second spot, depending on the results of the Poland-Argentina game, who are playing for that first spot. And if those teams come away with a draw, wow, that will just open things up for the Saudis in Group C. Again, just to make sure everyone heard me, I did not pick Mexico to go through, despite Mexico's history of always kind of advancing into the knockout stage and not doing much after that. Rocky, thanks for the support on this one. It's just an excuse the Euro snobs say. And oh, Connor here with some great trivia that I did not know, that Saudi players aren't allowed to play abroad. Now, Connor, I don't know if you know anything more about that. That's a really interesting comment. I'll have to research it. Like, is that a like governmental mandate? Is that a national team mandate? Or is it just, you know, more of a religious or political type of thing where they don't have guys going abroad? But really interesting. And, you know, it's funny because we saw it back when the 2010 World Cup, where I think 10 of Spain's 11 starters that won the World Cup that year all played in Spain. Now, granted, Barcelona and Real Madrid are not Al Hilal or any of the other Saudi teams. That's very true. But it does say something about having chemistry and understanding style of play. Oh, and here, Angus McCorder jumps in and says that is a governmental mandate. Really interesting. So, and here we got a new Wiseman with an excellent take here, linking the MLS to the World Cup here. Tata Martino really shouldn't have snubbed Chicharito and Vela. Very true. Very true. And he's got more than half of the USMNT roster started or starting in MLS. Absolutely. Not the current, I don't think current club, but at some point, these guys have all played or started in MLS. And if you want to throw in the fact that, you know, Weston McKennie got noticed in the Dallas Academy before making his debut in Germany and for Schalke, we got to remember Tyler Adams come up through Red Bull Academy, Brendan Aaronson, obviously with Philly. And without the MLS, we would probably lose a lot of the scouting base, right? And because that you get into the pay-to-play kind of thing. That's the only way you get noticed. Make sure your dad is the PDL or Olympic development coach. That's how I ended up getting cut, just to kind of take a walk back down bitter memory lane. All the buddies on my team made it, but the last spot went to the coach's kid. Anyway, let's continue our discussion of the remaining groups. We got Group D, led by favorite France. And in a surprise, you got Australia sitting in the second spot with 3 points with a game to play. Denmark and Tunisia tied for third and fourth. Denmark in third based on the goal differential. So Australia's next game against Denmark. And this is what is going to decide the fate of this group. France is through. We know that. Whatever their next result against Tunisia, they are through. Now, and so Australia and Denmark essentially are fighting for that second spot. I personally would be thrilled if Australia wins this game and gets through. And I mean, I'd go nuts if somehow France ended up losing to Tunisia and Australia wins the group by some miracle. But I don't think that'll happen. That, again, that's just Miracle Nick thinking there. But I actually have tons of family down in Sydney. I have spent 2 vacations in Australia. Absolutely love the country. Love the people. I should be wearing my Socceroos jersey right now and scarf as well that I have from them. But I would love for Australia to get the result against Denmark. That's my heart talking. I don't see Denmark losing to the Aussies. Now, they have played pretty poorly, Denmark has. I don't see the talent on that squad continuing to play poorly against an Australia team who just got really exposed by France. Now, France, what are they, the number 2 team in the world right now? 3 top 5 team in the world and playing like it? They're going to expose anyone's weaknesses and rack up a few goals. But the Aussies look so shook in that game that I don't know if they'll be able to handle what Denmark can bring, especially a desperate Denmark team. Oh, and a new Wiseman says, you got family down there? Go to Australia for the Women's World Cup. You know what? If I could get away from the kids and get away from work for a couple weeks, That would be a fantastic trip. I mean, from what I understand, the Aussie women's team, too, is excellent. Not to mention seeing just the quality of women's soccer, how it's improved around the world. And yeah, I got tons of family. When my grandfather left Greece, he came to Chicago. He had four of his siblings all end up in Australia. So I've got tons of second and third cousins all over the West Coast. I'm sorry, the East Coast of Australia. Love the country, love the people. And for my family's sake and for all the big soccer fans I met while I was down there, it truly is the universal language, soccer, right? Because that was one thing that I bonded with when I got to meet all my cousins and all of their extended friends. We started playing some pickup games. And quick story time here from Uncle Nick, right? We started playing some pickup games. And my cousin was a goalkeeper for his local club in Sydney. And they'd had a lot of players go on to the A-League, the Australian League, and play for one of the two Sydney squads. And he goes, you know, you're an American who knows what they're doing. We could probably get you a tryout with one of the Sydney teams, with Sydney FC. I was like, really? You think so? I got accepted to law school. Like, I'm not a big guy. I don't know if this is the path for me. Like, work permits, like, I'd be flying back and forth. I don't know. But he's like, his friends were going to come play a pickup game with us and scout me. But it never worked out. Ended up becoming Christmas and New Year time. We're down there for the holidays and it never worked out. But that's my what could have been story in my professional soccer career there, guys, whether you want to believe it 100% or not. But anyway, I'm pulling for Australia to get out of the group. Would love to see it. That's my heart. Head says Denmark. Now, looking at Group E, we have another group where there has been some crazy results, right? Here are the World Cup sets. Spain is atop the group with 4 points. Japan next with three, above Costa Rica on goal differential with 3 points. And then Germany in the bottom spot. Now, when I picked this group originally, I saw Germany and Spain getting out of this group. A lot of people were hard on the German defense, saying that they can't keep up and that they're going to allow a lot of goals between Spain and Japan. Well, they haven't allowed a lot of goals, but they certainly aren't scoring goals. And that, is, to me, is the bigger problem, that Germany's midfield was completely lacking and they're not creating any opportunities for their striker. We've seen a lot of two-striker sets during this World Cup, and I think Germany needs to go to that and get some more attacking movement up front. So at this point, it's anyone's guess. Costa Rica is going to be the team that decides the group's fate here, and their next game is against Germany. So win that game, Costa Rica, and it's most likely that you will be through to the knockout rounds, and we could have potentially two CONCACAF teams in the knockout rounds out of our four. Moving down to the bottom, I'm going to roll through these relatively quickly because there have been some surprises and some blowouts. Croatia is atop Group F, followed by Morocco, Belgium, and Canada. Now, Canada, it will be playing for pride. They're going to go all out against Morocco, I think. So I think given that, Croatia and Belgium will be happy to play for a draw, and then both of those teams actually, I shouldn't say that, looking at goal differential. Morocco has plus three goals on Belgium, so Belgium's got to come out and play to win against Croatia. But then Croatia cannot afford to be beaten and have their goal differential drop to the point where Morocco can jump them. So you are going to see two very, very competitive matches in Group F. Canada playing for pride, Morocco and Belgium playing to advance, and Croatia playing to hold on and advance. Excellent matchups here. Group G with Brazil and Switzerland in the one and two spots, Cameroon and Serbia in the bottom two spots with a point each. Let's take a look at Switzerland's last game in the group stage. They will be playing Switzerland. Serbia and Switzerland are going to decide the fate of that group. Winner of that game will likely advance unless Cameroon pulls off one of the biggest upsets in World Cup history, beating Brazil and moving in the two spot. Group H, Portugal with a great performance today. I mispredicted this one, right? I thought we would see Uruguay and South Korea come out of this group. Instead, it's Portugal, then Ghana in the one and two spot with South Korea and Uruguay. Lots of work to do. Now, looking at Uruguay, who's sitting in that fourth spot, their next game is against Ghana. So they will have the opportunity to jump ahead of Ghana with a win here and potentially, depending on the South Korea result and goal differential, get through along with Portugal. So I did not give Portugal enough credit. I thought maybe they had the talent, but definitely not the cohesiveness. I thought eventually the world talent would catch up to these guys, but hey, they keep doing it. Good for them. Now we got a couple more comments we're going to take, and then we'll jump into our halftime break here. Connor Knows Soccer says, playing the world's smallest violin for Canada, quote unquote, winning World Cup qualifying doesn't mean anything. Connor, I'm not going to go as harsh as you are, but I can totally see why you would say that, because Canada fans were out en masse, whatever you want to say it. Am I getting the French pronunciation right there, my Canadian friends? They were out in force on social media, rubbing it in the faces of the United States and Mexico. And you know, good, give them their moment, give them their due, give them their time to shine, whatever. But at the end of the day, you're right. There's no prize for winning qualifying. You qualify for the World Cup. And even as American fans, I think that's something we had to remember too, to not say, oh, Kings of CONCACAF, just because we would have won qualifying. No, but we won Nations League, we won Gold Cup. That's why we were obnoxious American fans on social media. Plus, you know, America, we'll do that. Angus says, Morocco is a big surprise to me. Yeah, absolutely. Morocco, let's jump back up. Number two in that group. Now, Morocco, absolutely a surprise. I think I'm equally surprised about how poorly Belgium is playing, as much as I am surprised about how well Morocco is playing. But what we have in this situation, I don't know the Moroccan players very well, but I know they have a few in some solid leagues around the world. I want to say there's even one or two MLS tie-ins. But what is interesting, and I wonder here, because again, without doing a tactical analysis or a complete deep dive on players, remember Morocco was putting in a bid against the United States to host 2022 or 2026, right? So you know that Morocco as a soccer nation, as a soccer federation, was probably doing some things early on to promote their young players. And maybe that's starting to pay off a little bit here, but that's just purely speculation on my part. I love the surprise that they are running on in the tournament. Hey, we got Brother BKL who is joining the chat. Brother BKL, great to have you with us. You, sir, are just in time for our halftime break. We have run down all the groups here in the World Cup, recapping things, giving you my thoughts and my picks for who's going to advance and who's going to go through. We're going to take a short break, so run up, refill your drinks, get cozy in your chair, and we'll be back in about 30 seconds to discuss some of the MLS transfers and news. For those on the podcast side, make sure you come on over and find us on YouTube during the break so that you can join our live chats. And for those of you on the YouTube side, make sure you go download and find us, rate and review us on whatever podcasting platforms. You can always take us with us and take us with you, because we would take us with us. Yeah, take us with you wherever you go. So we'll be back in about 30 seconds with the halftime break.
This MLS Weekly Recap is sponsored by Skira, Icelandic spring water, available at your local 7-Eleven. Icelandic for clear, Skira water comes from a spring in a nature preserve in Iceland with naturally low mineral content. This isn't your average water. Clearly, yes, pun intended, it's one of the best. Get some Skira today at your local 7-Eleven.
All right, soccer fans, we are coming back from halftime, and we are going to get into some of the MLS transfers and talk around the league here. Real quick, let me share my screen with you all, so that way you can see some of these newer headlines, some of the stories that developed today, because when I was preparing for the show last night, these obviously breaking news stories did not make it into my rundown. So first of all, LA Galaxy signed homegrown Jonathan Perez to a contract extension. Inter Miami signed homegrown Benjamin Cremaschi. New England signed U.S. Youth International Santiago Suarez. And St. Louis signed Jake Nerwinski in free agency. That name sounds familiar, so you guys will have to do a little quick research and let me know what's going on with Jake Nerwinski. Why do I know that name? Looks like he came from Vancouver. We're not going to get into this messy headline. I'm just going to scroll up so you guys don't see that right now. But there are a couple other headlines that I wanted to discuss. We will get into the messy headline at the end of the show. But also, real quick, let me remind everyone here how you can support Sons of a Pitch Soccer Central. If you are watching, that's the first thing you can do. Click like, click subscribe, turn the notifications on, share the links, watch, let a few ads play, click an ad. You know, all of that helps us get noticed in the YouTube algorithm and puts a few pennies in our pocket every time. If you want to step up and become a paid subscriber, check out YouTube as well as Anchor FM. You can find us there and become a monthly podcast supporter. And if you really want to take the next level and partner with us as a sponsor, please reach out to us, sonsofapitchsoccer@gmail.com or on Twitter at SOP Soccer. Direct messages are open. Additionally, you can check out in the description of the video. We started a blog and a website, so you can go check out those links. We would love to have a sponsor for those so we can slap your logo all over our new blog and website and help you offset some of our hosting fees for that. Also, if you want to throw a super chat or super thanks our way, even if it's just a dollar, let Mike know that I'm earning my keep around here a little bit, right? And big thanks to Mike for running all the chats and streams, keeping everybody up to speed on all things World Cup. All right, that being said, MLS off-season moves. Now, we ran down a few of the new and recent moves, but the biggest off-season move, without a doubt, guys, is Garth Lagerwey leaving the Seattle Sounders and going to Atlanta United. This was rumored because he was out of contract that he would leave somewhere, that it might be Atlanta. I know the chatter around Chicago was, oh, he's from Elmhurst. He's from a suburb of Chicago. The Chicago Fire need to bring him back and just give him whatever the heck he wants. Apparently those conversations never happened, which to me, if they didn't reach out, that's stupid. But then again, the Chicago Fire have not been known for smart management or ownership lately. But he got a vote of confidence in Seattle, based on their shareholders meeting. Now there's articles about how low of a turnout that actually was, but he got the vote of confidence, but now moves to Atlanta, gets a huge promotion. I mean, the guy doesn't need any more money or massive payouts. Probably. I'm assuming he got paid pretty well with the Seattle Sounders organization, but he is now the club president and chief executive officer of Atlanta United. He runs that club now. He is running Atlanta United. To give you some background about his accomplishments, if you don't know already, he won 3 MLS Cups and made another 3 finals as sporting director for RSL and Seattle. And Garth Lagerwey actually played in the league from 96 to 2001. He was a goalkeeper playing for Kansas City, Dallas, and the Miami Fusion. So that's just a little bit of his accomplishments and his tie into the MLS, into American soccer. Here's kind of what I'm thinking, big picture, Atlanta United. And let me know what you guys think in the chats or the comments or even on Twitter when we post the link to the video. You can continue the conversation there. Darren Eales kind of helped create the culture of Atlanta United, right, early on. You had and signed some great players. And you had Tata Martino and the initial players set the on-the-pitch culture, that winning culture. There were definitely mistakes made with coaches after Tata Martino, no doubt about that. But now Garth Lagerwey has the task of keeping Atlanta a trophy contender year after year after year. We've seen him with so much sustained success in Seattle. You know, their 13-year playoff streak. They're competing for trophies every year. I think they, again, 3 MLS Cup finals, 2 victories, CONCACAF Champions League, couple of U.S. Open Cups, if not more. Like, he is there to create sustained success for a team that will spend money. That's fantastic. And a new Wiseman here, you beat me to it, because my next question was going to be, what does this mean for Carlos Bocanegra? And a new Wiseman, a resident Atlanta fan here, says, now fire Bocanegra and get us fans a tailgate space. Make the fans happy. And you know what? That's an easy thing to do. Every club should have that. Every club should just say, here's your fan tailgate space. We're going to turn it over to the supporter section. You run it, whatever. Let them do their thing. Absolutely, man. And as much as I liked watching Bocanegra as a player and kind of how I feel for him as an executive right now because of his playing history, you're not a player no more, and you're not running things well. So it would not surprise me to see Lagerwey come in and move Bocanegra, maybe not fire him and get rid of him and kick him out of the organization, because that might not be the look he wants to go with as the new head honcho there. He might move him into more of an ambassador role or something where he can't actually affect what's going on. Dan Gehringer, thanks for jumping in the chat, man. Enjoy your dinner. We will see you on the next one. And, oh, Angus, thank you for answering about Nerwinski. He played previously for Vancouver and is a right back. So St. Louis getting a veteran defender there. Excellent. So we've got this. We've got Garth Lagerwey to Atlanta United. I'm guessing Bocanegra is moved or is voluntarily told, voluntold to do something. And we'll see. But within the next couple of years, I imagine Atlanta United is back competing for trophies and doing it consistently. I think you're going to see a lot more younger players being signed and trying to be developed, and probably a lot more going into, I don't know much about the Atlanta United Academy or their MLS Next and MLS Next Pro clubs, but I imagine you're going to start to see a lot more investment there. Now, Connor No Soccer jumps in with another kind of executive move here. He says, been snooping on the Crew Twitter and reports our ownership are in talks with Wilfred Nance to be the new head coach. Nothing official yet. Deal to be completed in December, if true. So I have heard that as well with Caleb Porter getting fired. I don't know why Montreal would let go of Wilfred Nance. Maybe he wants to get out of Montreal. Maybe he can find a bigger, better paycheck at another club. Maybe the club is starting to sell off their assets and he's not going to be able to keep that sustained success and be the coach there when they are ready to win trophies. So there is a lot of moving parts with Montreal right now. So we'll see how that comes down and contributes to everything going on. But Connor, definitely keep us updated. Keep tweeting at us. Keep letting us know. And for all you Crew fans and MLS fans, make sure you go find Connor No Soccer on Twitter and on YouTube. Check out his content as well. We're going to get into some more Crew stuff, but let me give a final thought here from a new Wiseman on Atlanta. He says, Atlanta United 2 is a bust. The club kept chasing the next Almiron. And that initial model of get those young South Americans, bring them in, flip them, buy them for $3-5 million, flip them for $10-12 million. That worked for Almiron. That worked maybe for one or two other guys, but it is not working right now. And again, a new Wiseman says Atlanta focused too much on the first team. That's why we're the worst reserve team. So I would imagine Garth Lagerwey, the way he's built up Seattle and the way he brought in maybe not the highest profile designated player signings, but excellent MLS players, I think you're going to start to see that change immediately. And maybe he sends Bocanegra down to help start build out an academy. But now we teased the Columbus Crew stuff. Columbus Crew end up actually letting one of their star standouts over the last few seasons, Artur, go, and he gets signed by Houston Dynamo. So we saw Pedro Santos go. We saw Artur go now. We saw Caleb Porter out. Derek Etienne Jr. is a free agent. I think he's already in advanced talks if he hasn't signed with another team. So the Crew are really continuing the rebuild. They get $300,000 in GAM for Artur and up to $350,000 with incentives. And for a 26-year-old who was an excellent, excellent MLS player, when healthy, I will add that qualifier, he was great helping out the Crew and solidifying the midfield. So I think this is a good move for both teams because Houston's trying to rebuild. The Crew are trying to rebuild. They get money. Houston gets the player. I just hope Artur can fit in with Hector Herrera in that midfield of Houston. Now running down a few other MLS signings here. Celtic over in the Scottish Premier League is close to signing Montreal's Alistair Johnson. That time with the Canadian national team has served him well. He spent the last year with Montreal after coming up from Nashville, I believe. He's had a career year. He is versatile. He can play pretty much anywhere along the back line or on the right side. And a little thing to watch out for, Nashville do have a 10% sell-on. So I would expect the price to be a little inflated more so that way there's more money to distribute back to Nashville. But the website transfer market has him valued at about $6 million. So look for that signing to be announced after the World Cup. Coming back down into the United States, way south, Orlando City making some moves, giving themselves some roster flexibility. They re-sign their former DP Mauricio Pereira through 2024 on a TAM deal using targeted allocation money. This opens up a DP spot for them. This is good for Orlando. You got a player you know, a fan favorite, a quality MLS player. He is definitely not DP level anymore, especially at the age of 33. But he can be there and help you solidify your roster, solidify your locker room as you go out and buy more offense. And now they've got a new DP spot. They can do just that. They also sign veteran Felipe Martins, the Brazilian who was with Austin last season. The guy's been playing in MLS for 10 years now for Montreal, Red Bull, Vancouver, DC, and again, most recently, Austin. He is a bench player the last five seasons, and the speculation is he's going to fill in for Junior Urso until they can find someone who can be that actual replacement for Junior Urso and bring a lot more attacking. Few more goalkeeping moves to add in. Andrew Tarbell, formerly of Austin, goes to Houston. DC United signed Tyler Miller, formerly of Minnesota United. Minnesota United then re-signed goalkeeper Eric Dick, and Austin signed Brad Stuver to a long-term deal through 2025 with an option for 2026. I always love saying long-term deal for 3 years. Like, I think that's kind of hilarious that that's a long-term deal in MLS. The first three moves, Tarbell, Miller, and Dick are kind of backup goalkeeping moves. But Brad Stuver is definitely going to be the starter for Austin for the foreseeable future. The guy's had a couple of great seasons for them and was key to Austin's playoff run. So let's take a few comments on some of the MLS stuff, and then we're going to get into the messy rumors, my terrible takes on it. I know you're going to love them, the terrible. And then we can wrap the show here. Connor says, for Columbus, need a new center back. Will Sands is the new starting left back. Good update there, Connor. Thank you for that. We got Crispy Zinger jumping in the chat. Crispy, welcome to the show. He says, we better play the game of our lives tomorrow. And that's a tall order to ask the United States to play the game of their lives for three straight games, but it's what needs to be done. And I think this group gets it done. I think it happens, Crispy. Now he says, I want to see a murder tomorrow. I don't need to see a murder. I just need to see 3 points. I just need to see the United States putting the ball in the back of the net 2-3 times and making sure that we get out of this group stage and go into that game against Netherlands, maybe Ecuador, with all the right momentum. That's what I want to see. I think they can get it done. Crispy, in the first half of the show, we were talking about, can the U.S. break down and get quality chances against an Iran team that may actually just be content to bunker? Let me know what you think in the comments, and we'll chime in with that. Getting back to the crew talk, Mensa and Milos are great, but I think their player careers are almost up based on age alone. Well said, Connor. A new Wiseman says, Orlando with an open DP spot? Are they going to get that free agent at the World Cup? And I love how you capitalized that free agent. You must be talking about Luis Suarez, right? Of course. Suarez is the guy that you're talking about. No, that is the final thing we'll touch on here. It is the Messi to MLS rumors here. And I'm going to continue to call them rumors because this has just been an ongoing saga with Messi, with any star player, and Inter Miami and David Beckham and all of that in the back, blah, blah, blah. Let me know when the deal gets done. Let me know when Messi's in Miami at their offices with a pen in his hand and not just signing autographs. Let me know when that happens. Here are some of the phrases that have been put out in the last couple of press releases. Inter Miami is increasingly confident they are in a position to sign Messi. They are confident that they will reach an agreement. They've had numerous meetings with Messi's father about him coming to Miami. None of this makes me think it's going to happen. None of this. There are so many qualifiers in all of these statements that, to me, I haven't heard anyone say, oh, yeah, Messi's agent talked to someone at the Miami front office. Or Messi put out a comment that said, yeah, MLS would be a great place to play. I'd love to take my talents to South Beach. Like, if he said something like that, completely different story. He's still in the running to be re-signed with PSG, his current club, Paris. And he is also supposedly being courted by Barcelona, who want to try to bring him back. That's another news headline that was floated out there a little while back. So, all of that being said, I'm not confident they're any closer than they were a week ago, a year ago, 2 years ago, the last time Messi was a free agent, of him coming to Miami. I am not confident at all. It could happen, but as of today, I don't think they're as close as anyone thinks or imagines. And let me let me put a little more perspective into it, right? The one other headline was like, oh, Messi's father had many, many meetings with Miami. Not his agent, not him, not PSG. He's still under contract through 23 with PSG. Nothing coming out of Paris, right, to indicate that they're looking to transfer him. Here's the other comparison I want to make. I'm a lawyer by trade. I'm an attorney. And if I went in and used these kind of qualifiers, I'd be sued for malpractice. Can you imagine a lawyer walking in to the courthouse and be like, Your Honor, I'm increasingly confident that my client is innocent. I'm confident the jury will believe me. I've met with the opposing attorney's law firm and their family. I've met with the victim's family. I think we're feeling pretty good about this case, Your Honor. No, that's malpractice. I'd never win a case. I'd be laughed out of the courtroom. Like, no, not going to happen. So with those final thoughts here, guys, let me take a couple more comments and then we'll wrap for the night and we can get you guys into bed before another day of World Cup action. And New Wiseman says, nah, the other free agent, CR7. Ooh, yes, Man United did terminate his contract. It was a mutual parting of the ways. I'm sure they did that just to help him save a little face. We'll see. Does he want to come here? I think he likes having that money and that big flashy lifestyle. And I don't know if that's going to translate for him, at least in the United States. I heard a Saudi Arabian club offered him like a 2 or 3 year deal for like $225 million. Hey, maybe he just goes and takes the fast cash and stays in the Middle East for a few years, right? If he's doing all right with things in Qatar. We got Josh Lafferty jumping in on the chat. Josh, great to have you with us, man. Make sure you like and subscribe so you don't miss any of the content in our live chats that we do each and every week. He asks, is Wilfred the new crew coach? Not official. They are in talks. Connor knows soccer, who is one of our local crew guys here. He says that it's most likely that will be done by the end of December. But they are in talks. That has been the rumors ever since Caleb Porter got fired. And again, I was saying it'd be interesting to see him leave, but given Montreal's kind of impression here that they're selling off some of their talent, maybe they're looking to rebuild in a different way, that maybe he's not the guy that wants to be around for that. So I think it does get happen. This one does seem to have legs, but give it another couple, 3 weeks. I think you'll hear an official announcement. Angus McCorder says, I will believe it when Messi is signed. I see him playing in Europe. Yeah, I don't see him coming to the United States. And if he does, it is not going to be a starting midfielder for Inter Miami. But hey, could be wrong. We'll give Brother BKL the last comment here. I'm not sure if it's true or not. Besides, Messi's finished in the World Cup and CR7's contract is terminated. I don't want to see that. It's too much. All right. Well, let me try and parse through some of the language you put here in your comment. But yeah, you've got Messi, who's got a year left on his contract. You've got Ronaldo, who is essentially a free agent. And you've got some MLS clubs with a little bit of cash. Do they bring him in for a year or two? Is it the Zlatan effect? Is that all they want to get out of him, is a season or two of great jersey sales, a few highlight reels? And are you willing to mortgage your MLS franchise's short-term future to bring guys like that in? Maybe you will. Maybe they will be. I don't know if I would do that as a GM, but then again, I'm the same guy who said I don't want LeBron James in a Chicago Bulls uniform because that would kill everything that they've been building towards over the several years. That just tells you a little something about me and how I value superstars and team play. Anyway, guys, with all of that, I want to thank each and every one of you for jumping into our broadcast. I keep saying I'm going to cut it down to like 30, 40 minutes, and here we are approaching an hour. Thank you for sticking with me. Thank you for chatting, for chiming in, for just listening, and for growing the sport through conversation. The mission here at Sons of a Pitch Soccer Central, if you want to continue to support us, again, like, subscribe, share the link, click an ad, let the ads play, send us a super chat, a super thanks, become a paid subscriber through YouTube or over on Anchor FM. Links to that are in the comments, as well as check out the new blog and website. It's been a long couple nights with some sick kids, so I haven't had a chance to write any new articles over the last couple days, but we'll be getting some of those out for you soon, especially looking ahead to the knockout rounds of the World Cup. Thank you all again. It's been a lot of fun. I love doing this every week with you. Thanks again to Mike, who is one of our founders and producers and hosts here, for letting me come in and do this with you guys each and every week. It has been a lot of fun. Let's go USA. Make sure you find our live stream and chat and watch along tomorrow. right here on the Sons of a Pitch Soccer Central channel. And just like every good Greek, way too long for a goodbye. So I'll cut it now. Thanks for watching, everybody.